वसुदेव वसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दोग्धा गोपालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्सः सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्.
इन् अवर् लास्ट् क्लास् वी हेव् स्पोकन् अबौट् टु वेरि इम्पार्टेण्ट् पायिण्ट्स् दट् even a wise man acts in accordance with his own nature. Beings will follow their own nature. What can restraint do? One should be aware of the snares of the powerful indriyas. Here is both a diagnosis of why even sometimes wise people first of all have to follow their own nature, whether it be in spiritual practice, whether it will be in the act of eating food, exercise, everything according to their capacity. What can restraint do means that if somebody wants to go against his or her own nature, the result can only be disastrous. Therefore, the Lord is advising that find out your own true nature. But we are not so intelligent that we are able to find out our own true nature. So we need a spiritual guide who can help us. That is one of the functions of the spiritual teacher, that he has to study the nature of the student and devise an appropriate means. Here we have to remember a very important point. Sri Ramakrishna used to say in Bengali, Jato mot tato poth. As many faiths, so many paths. But we also need to understand what it really means. We are not merely speaking about religions. Anything can be mixed and matched. It is not a cut and dried something. It is something that we have to change when we start. On the way also we need to change it, if necessary. Simple example, Swami Vivekananda advocated eating of meat. Many people raised objection that is it not going against the scriptures. Swamiji replied, my purpose is not to advocate meat eating. People are thinking they are sattvic because two similar extremes look very similar. Tamas and sattva look very similar. But you people, I know, because I have studied you, have been wallowing in this worst of the qualities called tamas. So, I hope by eating meat, at least you will have the strength to struggle and overcome rajas. A spiritual, wise spiritual teacher always takes into consideration through study, through intuition of the student's life, and many special gurus are there. They can not only see the present situation, they can also have insight into the previous janmas samskaras. That is what exactly jati means, caste means, not the birth that we come to know and associate with, but the samskaras, the impressions, habits we have developed from many past lives. And these impressions could fall, all of them, only into three categories, tamas, rajas and sattva, not any particular guna, but usually a mixture, one dominating, the other subordinate. So this is what the wise teacher that Krishna is telling. Nigraha means restraint. Restraint really means find out your true nature and follow it. If you go against your nature, not only it will not do you any good, it will be actually counterproductive. That's why one very important point we have to keep in mind, Sri Ramakrishna's relationship with his disciples is always one-to-one. From each individual, he maintained a individual separate relationship. And every wise guru also does the same thing. The essence of what we discussed was that find out, either by yourself if you are intelligent, or take the help of a teacher, find out your nature, and with implicit faith in the wisdom of the teacher, you go ahead and then you will reach the goal. But if you are foolhardy to find out, you think you are intelligent to find out what is good for you, then in many ways we are likely to fail. Then Krishna gives a grave warning, that is, do not become a slave to these sense organs, which he will expound in detail a little bit later on. The verse is, Indriyasya Indriyasya Arthe Raga Dveshav Vyavasthitav Tayoho Navasham Agachet Tauhi Asya Paripanthinav. Attachment and aversion, respectively called in Sanskrit Raga and Dvesha. We are attached naturally to what we think immediate result, that is pleasure. And we don't think what it is going to, how it is going to end up in future. Similarly, that which produces unhappiness, we think that is always going to give me unhappiness only. But many times, what is initially painful might become in long term a most wonderful truth, that it leads to long-lasting happiness, betterment in every way. We develop this raga-dvesha, both are attachments, and a spiritual aspirant has to overcome both these and direct the strength of both of them towards God only. These two are, they abide in the senses, let none come under their sway. That means you go beyond attachment and aversion. For they are his deadliest foes. The greatest enemy is never ever outside. But we are the greatest enemies of ourselves. Now here is something we have to really learn. Every sense object is not creating problem for us. No sense organ will ever create any problem to anybody. It is our reaction, how we take every sense organ, that actually creates action and reaction. And we have to be careful in what view, with what motive we are looking. I'll give a simple example to illustrate this. When a young man looks at a woman, he can look in two ways. If he is looking at a strange woman, she might become an object of enjoyment, which he thinks, and he may be attached. But if he looks at his own mother, sister, then it produces the opposite result, pure love without any type of worldly desire. We can extend these examples ad infinitum. So the Lord is warning that the problem is not the world, which Sri Ramakrishna so beautifully presented. A boat can be in the water, but water should not be in the boat. What it means is, you can be in the world, but worldliness need not be in you. That means the onus of either our progress or digress. Both depend not upon the world. Here also I must point out something very, very important. That point is, actually this world is created not to bring our downfall, but to teach us wonderful lessons so that we can progress in life. Pain also is a great teacher. Pleasure also is the greatest teacher. And if we look at the lives of great people, we will not come across a single example of any great person who has not gone through the same experiences like us. In fact, if I tell you, probably saints have gone through even more harrowing, intensive pain, suffering than ordinary people. Compared to them, we are in heaven. But that is also our downfall. If only we had more unhappiness, there was a great hope for us that we will at last turn towards God. This point also, let us keep in mind, proceed to the next verse which says, everybody has to act according to his own dharma, and then one has to be very careful how the person is going to face his situations in life, whether he is developing attachment or aversion towards any object, and a single object is not excluded from this purview. With that idea, the Lord is telling, one has to discharge one's own duty. That means follow one's own nature. That is the best for that person. Let us always keep in mind, most often we don't know what is our nature. But our teacher, who is a wise person, he knows, he directs. That is why, with implicit faith, whatever he says, even if we don't understand, even if we think that this is counterproductive in our limited intellect, but Guru told, let me follow it. And that will ultimately lead, that is the, what we call fastest track to reach our destination. So the Lord is telling now, Sreyan Swadharmaha Vigunaha Paradharmatsu Anusthitat Swadharme Nidharam Shreyaha Paradharmo Bhayavaha. Better is one's own duty, though devoid of merit, than the duty of another well discharged. Better is death in one's own duty. The duty of another is fraught with fear. That means it will take us away from God. Here, let us remember a beautiful story that has been quoted by Swami Vivekananda in his most marvelous book called Karma Yoga. It consists of several chapters. One of the chapters is called What is Duty? Dharma. There is a beautiful story from Mahabharata called the dialogue between a righteous butcher and a Brahmin ascetic. I think most of us are aware of that story. But to briefly recollect, there was a young Brahmin and he had a desire to progress in spiritual life. Unfortunately, he had old parents, and neglecting the parents, he renounced the world, went to a far-off place, and started living and practicing intense austerity. As a result, he developed certain psychic powers. One day morning, he saw that a bird had dropped some filth upon him. He got so angry, he looked up with anger, and flash of lightning went and made the bird turn into ashes. He felt very proud. Soon after that, he came out for begging alms in that nearby village. He stood in front of a house, and then he very politely, we are all polite in public view, so he said, Mother, bhiksham dehi, give me some alms. And she said, My son, maybe she was much younger than him, but she was a mother, she has motherly attitude. She addressed him, My son, any stranger is either father, or a son, or a holy person. Please wait a little. My husband is sick. As soon as I finish his service, I will attend to you. Now this produced a reaction in the ascetic. He started thinking, this wretched householder woman, I am an ascetic, and I am a brahmana. She is neither a brahmana nor an ascetic, and it is her duty to throw up everything, give up everything, and rush and do my service. Probably this kind of thoughts arose. But then the lady's gentle voice came up, My son, I am not a crow. You could burn with your eyes. This produced a tremendous astonishment. Few minutes back, what happened in that secret forest? How did this lady come to know? So he waited. He was given bhiksha. Then he asked. She gave a beautiful reply. My son, I don't know anything. I am devoted to my husband. I look upon him as God, and he is sick. Now my duty is to serve. I am not a learned person. But I got, by God's grace, by doing this Swadharma, I got the powers. She didn't stop there and said, I think you are in need of some good advice. Go to the next village. There is a man by such and such a name. He take his advice. Then only you are going to progress in life. This man was astonished. By this time he was convinced, walked to the next village. Upon inquiry, he came to know this man was a butcher. And then again thoughts might have arisen. I am putting it a mild way, that to me, a Brahmin ascetic, to learn wisdom from a butcher, who was considered in the society as the worst class by everybody. By this time, his eye of wisdom also was opened, because the lady was an example. He went, and then immediately the butcher, before this person could introduce himself, "Oh, such and such a lady had sent you." He was even more astonished. He waited. Then the butcher did his dharma, closed the shop, took him home, served his parents. Until that time, the young ascetic had to wait. And then he came back and said, "Now I am free. What is it you want to discuss?" It's a beautiful discussion. Dharma vyadha samvada. And he said, "Your parents are suffering. You have no right. No one else is there to look after." And that is what Sri Ramakrishna's glorious example also sets the right guidance for us. Even though he was a God-realized soul, until she passed away, he went there, made pranams to her, massaged her feet, and saw that she was fed properly. And he said, "If I don't do this one, I will never get peace of mind." Now this is a very strange situation for us to study. A man, a Brahmagnani, says, "I will not have peace of mind until I serve my mother." If father was there, he would have done exactly the same thing. What is the lesson for us? Many lessons are there, that your very obtainment of Brahmagnana is because of mother's grace. And mother's grace came because you are devoted to your parents. If you neglect your parents, then the grace will be there, but you won't be able to access it. So, and also to set an example like Sri Krishna for all of us, that our first duty is for our parents. Naturally, the practical implication would be, suppose you have other brothers, sisters who are looking after, that's fine. But make arrangement, see that they don't suffer. After that, interesting point is, if they try to put a stop to your becoming a monk or spiritual practice, they have no right. They have certain rights. You fulfill those rights. After that, whether you want to get married, whether you want to become a monk, is not in the realm of their commandment. That is purely the individual's taste. That's why many children, they get confused and say, "I don't want to marry, but my parents are forcing me to marry." I say, that's none of their business. Their business is to bring you up in the right way, give you right education, make you stand on your feet, and let you decide for yourself what you want to do. That is their duty. If they don't do that, they are neglecting their duties. They neglect up their duties. And if you listen to them, because if you marry, you have to suffer. If you put a stop to your spiritual practice, you have to suffer. It has nothing to do. Everybody has their own duty. They should do their duties, but they should not stray into what is not their duty at all. This is a great lesson Sri Ramakrishna is trying to teach us. How devoted he was to his own parents, mother, father, and everybody else. Krishna indicates here, the next verse that is following is, he had already warned us. What was the warning? Be very careful about dealing with sense objects. Senses and sense objects, these are two separate issues. I have eyes, I have things to see. Do not relate them. I have the right either to see, or to see in a particular way, or not to see at all. We think that it is the object who are tempting us. No. Object can never either tempt us, pull us down, or pull us up. It is our own mind. Our own mind means our gunas we have painfully acquired throughout our past lives. It is they who make us look at things, react to things in a particular way, and that is our real bondage. This is very great significance, because even if a person goes into a solitary place where the person cannot see another human face, but he can see birds mating,
He can say animals mating and he can become a samsari. I have stories to tell, but I am not going to tell how downfall comes. Even fish also could bring a man's mind down completely to the samsara. It is not only human beings, it is anybody else. What Krishna wants to warn us is that great robber, and Sri Ramakrishna had put it so beautifully through the story of the three robbers. The first robber, Tamoguna, wanted to kill. The second robber, no, why kill? Let us bind him. The third one, not only released, brought him out, showed him the way, that's your home. The symbolism is, we are all travelers. These three gunas are the three robbers. And depending upon which guna we had assiduously cultivated through many lives, that guna is going either to help us or to hinder us. Therefore, our endeavor should be to always cultivate the highest guna, which is called sattva, of course mixed with rajas and tamas, because nobody can cultivate only one guna. The three in one, one in three. But which one is the dominant one? The important point is that this greatest robber, a robber robs. An external robber, what does he rob? He robs your property, your money, the things you possess. But this great robber, what does it? It covers your knowledge. What knowledge? In the form of smriti, memory. What memory? Instead of saying, I am divine, I say, I am a man, I am a woman, I am happy, unhappy, young man, young woman, old woman, and blessed woman, unblessed woman. So many problems we are identifying ourselves with. It is the greatest robber. And Bhagavan wants to warn us. Attachments and aversions of the sense organs for their respective sense objects are instinctive and natural in everyone. It is natural. The sense objects by themselves are incapable of bringing any wave of sorrow, hesitation or happiness into our minds. We get agitated and disturbed not by our sense organs, but by the reaction we create in our mind. The mind gets disturbed because when the stimuli reach the mind, it accepts certain things, certain types of stimuli, calling it as pleasant, therefore good, and their opposites as painful, therefore bad. Our definition of what is good is what is pleasant. Definition of what is bad is what is painful. But many times in life, Swami Vivekananda warns us that pain, suffering, is the greatest lesson which will quickly take us to God. That's why Holy Mother always said, misery is the greatest gift of God. You be careful and do not blame the objects. Find out why you are being disturbed, which guna is making you either label them as good or label them as evil. This is called, then if it is good or pleasant, we develop an attachment called raga, and if it is unpleasant, we develop the other attachment called dvesha. Our whole life, if we analyze it properly, is nothing but a running between these two, running away from dvesha, objects which we think are pain-giving, and running towards objects which we call pleasure-giving. A time must come if we want to control our mind, because mind is agitated only by these two, nothing else. And therefore, if we want to control your raga and dvesha. Is there any way? Yes, there is a way. The Lord is going to indicate it. It says, the Gita doesn't suggest the secret of this mastery in life is to live free from the tyrannies of attachments and aversions. But they will happen. Don't be under any delusion. Sri Ramakrishna never was attacked by raga or dvesha. 24 hours, something is pleasant, something is unpleasant. But he was not touched. Sri Krishna, Sri Rama, beautiful shloka, you know. Prasanna kamya nagata abhishekataha tathana mamle vanavasa dukkataha. Mukham Bujasri Raghunandanasyame Sadastusa Mangala Manjala Prada. May I cherish that most beautiful faces of Sri Ramachandra, which is so pleasant to behold, which never became delighted upon hearing the news that he was going to be coronated, nor became even slightly depressed when he came to know, even only at the end of that night, that you are not only not going to be coronated, but you are going to be banished for 14 long years into a jungle. It's practically a death sentence. Anyway, there is a lot of philosophy there. I will not go into it. Gita doesn't advocate that you avoid things. Sometimes avoidance is helpful, but there must come a time when you have to face it. And Tantra had developed this beautiful philosophy. Tantra classifies people into three categories. The first category is tamasic dominated, called Pashu. For them, strict rules and regulations. Higher than that are Rajogunas. They are called Veeras, heroes. Oh, you boldly attack the very objects which are likely to drown you, draw you and drown you. But a sattvika person is called Divya, divine. And thousands of the sense objects might pass in front of him. He would not even take notice of it. Even in every path of sadhana, the wise guru will always watch, study his disciple and say, if he is tamoguni, he says, don't do this, don't do this, do this. If he is a hero, he will bring those very objects so that he can test himself. And Sri Ramakrishna's example itself is greatest example. He called Holy Mother, sleep in my bed. If I have conquered desire in me, what can you do to me? If I am not conquered, then it is a delusion to think. Such bold experiments by a sannyasi is rarely seen in this world. In order to detach ourselves from both likes and dislikes, we have to get rid of our false egocentric vanities. And here is an important truth. Likes and dislikes, raga and dvesha, they do not belong to the sense objects, but they belong to the ahankara. It is ahankara. I want happiness. I don't want unhappiness. I decide to do, and I decide not to do. The problem is not even raga dvesha. This raga dvesha are like colors. If you want to color something, there must be a canvas. And that canvas is ahankara. That's why Patanjali beautifully outlines this process. Avidya, ignorance. How does it manifest? Asmita, ahankara. Egotism. How does egotism manifest? As raga and dvesha. Likes and dislikes. Attachment and aversion. And what do they bring? The root cause of attachment and aversion is body consciousness. How does it work? Every human being passes through three stages: waking, dream, and dreamless or sleep stage, sushupti. Have you noticed, during sushupti, you are neither body conscious nor mind conscious. And therefore, you have neither raga nor dvesha. It may be terribly hot. You don't mind so long as you are asleep. If it is air conditioned, some beautiful person is fanning you, first class cooled drinks and beautiful tasty food is there, you are completely unaware. One of the Upanishads says, and Shankaracharya comments upon that, Tatha Raja na Raja, Bhataha na Bhataha. A king is no king, a servant is no servant. Both are completely equal, because there is no body, there is no mind. Only one thing is shining, aham, aham, aham. This is what Bhagavan Krishna is trying to tell us, that these things will always be there, but you have to overcome it. Spiritual sadhana is to purify our ego. Ramana Maharshi used to say, aham will not go. What is the problem? Problem is not aham. Aham is pure consciousness. Ahankara is the problem. Kara is the problem. What is kara? Whatever is added to aham. I am the body, I am the mind, I am Hindu, I am Indian, I am Christian, I am happy, I am married, I am unmarried, I am a monk. These are called karas. Every kara, when you are deeply asleep, are you a monk or a householder? Are you a realized soul or an ignorant person? Neither. You are a happy person. A beautiful conclusion we have to say. In order to detach, we have to overcome likes and dislikes. And when we look upon them with equanimous samatvam, accept them. These are coming because of our karma phala, my own karma phala. Mind becomes less and less agitated. And in the end, the aham, that kara, as the likes and dislikes become less and less, the kara also becomes less and less. When the mind attains samatvam, that's why he said samatvam yoga uchyate. What is yoga? Complete union with the one's own nature. I am the divine. That is called yoga. And this person realizes, I am the divine being. And that is what is being said here so beautifully, that you slowly reduce. Now suppose I get out of things. Now you can't get out because today or tomorrow you have to test yourself. And testing can be done only in the laboratory of this world of raga dvesha. You can't test yourself in a cave. Every sleeping person is a saint. Only the person wakes up, then whether he is Ravanasura, Vibhishana or Kumbhakarna will become obvious to everybody. Here is a person, Bhagavad Gita is advising to him, first you face all these likes and dislikes, that means come into contact with the objects, but watch yourself, am I getting attached? Or am I disliking it? Because dislike is also more terrible attachment than what is an attachment? Here a beautiful definition of attachment is necessary. An attachment is something which will not allow our mind to focus upon God. Whether likes or dislikes, both distract us from God. This is how we have to look into. Boldly face the brute, that's what Swami Vivekananda says, and then they will be frightened. The next step, should they be discarded? Likes and dislikes should be discarded? No. Both of them, make them your aids, your sena. I cannot refrain myself but mentioning here. If you study Ramayana, you will come to know one thing very wonderful. What is it? Rama's army, excepting Lakshmana, everybody else. Can you show anybody who is a human being? All vanaras only. So then our ideas come like this. Why vanaras? Vanara means what? Monkey. What is monkey here? It's a symbol. Symbol of our mind. A restless mind, a demonic mind, a proud mind. This is called vanara. But if it is joined with Rama, God, these very things now become most helpful things. Kama, krodha. This is what in Bengali Sri Ramakrishna used to call mod firyada. Turn the direction. In fact, the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita itself, dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamo asmi bharatarshabha. O Arjuna, I am kama which is not adharmic. Dharmic kama, in fact, a person who doesn't have kama, who doesn't run a prartha, he is not a Hindu. Who is a Hindu? He accepts four purusharthas, goals of human life. Dharma, artha, kama and moksha. If anybody says, I want only dharma and I want moksha, but I don't want artha and kama, he is not a Hindu. He is not even a human being. So why is it? That's a separate subject. I am not going into it, but it is this, that the body and mind are called artha and kama. They must be made fit instruments and they must be directed. If the monkey mind is always associated with God, those very qualities before which were leading for his downfall, now they will unite him with the divine Lord himself. This is the one symbolism that we can clearly understand from the Ramayana. In fact, every mythological story in Mahabharata, what is it? Fight between the good and the evil, dharma and adharma. The Lord is warning us, do not refrain. Because the whole problem was Arjuna was overcome by delusion. What is the delusion? I like Bhishma Drona. I hate Duryodhana and Ko. Then the Lord says, your attachment to Bhishma Drona is equal foe preventing you from reaching the God as your aversion to Duryodhana and Dushyasana. The truth is, Bhishma is Atman, Duryodhana is also Atman, Dushyasana is Atman, And Drona is also Atman. Everybody is an Atman. Each soul is potentially divine. Interesting question here. I want to deviate for a second. Then why this Duryodhana is misbehaving? I don't want to go into details, but I want to give you the clue here. If you believe in Hinduism, you have to believe in the law of karma. And if you believe in the law of karma, all the difficulties, problems, sufferings the Pandavas have gone through, can we attribute them to Kauravas? Or is it because of their own karma phala? Think deeply. Important point is, Duryodhana and Dushasana are there actually to help you, push you towards God. Because your dharmic nature will come forward. When Bhishma and Drona is there, you don't know you are dharmic or adharmic. But if there is somebody whom you dislike, then crystal clear division between I am attached and I am also hating Duryodhana and Ko. The point is, Arjuna's love for Bhishma Drona is a deadly enemy to reach, manifest his divinity, because this is my grandfather, this is my teacher. That is not the outlook. Proper outlook is, he is also divine, he is also divine, he is also divine. If we really believe it, it leads to another inevitable conclusion, which is, if everything is divine, why are they behaving? The answer is there, because they are following their nature. What is the nature of a scorpion? What is the nature of a mosquito? They are only following their nature. It is their business to understand and overcome it. And if you don't deserve it, can they really sting you? It is impossible. These are profound truths which I can only give hint and you have to think about them. Now, important point is that all these are necessary to push the soul so that it manifests more and more divinity. But there is a technique of how to do it. That is called yoga. That's why this chapter is called Karma Yoga. That is where the Lord is telling you have to perform your duties properly. First of all, find out what is your dharma and then follow it. If you don't know, take refuge with a wise guru and follow it. Then the next question that comes is, yes, I know what is my dharma. I have accepted my guru's directions. I am following it, or I want to follow it, but something seems to pull me back. This is a disaster. This is the crisis, spiritual crisis. We want to do something, and something from within ourselves doesn't allow us to move forward. So this was the question Arjuna was putting on our behalf. Who was Arjuna? Every sincere spiritual aspirant is an Arjuna. Arjuna asks, Kathakena prayuktoyam papam charati purushaha anichinna pivarshneya baladivaniyojitaha. Arjuna puts this question, what is that, O Krishna, prompted by which a man is forced, as it were, to indulge in sin even against his will? Very important shloka. We also sit for meditation. We also want. Nobody is there. Even then, our mind will be very restless. If somebody is there, our tendency is, I am unable to meditate because of the neighbors, house members, other people. But if nobody is there, whom are you going to blame? That's why you are frightened to go into solitude, because then you have to face yourself and accept you are useless fellow, and then we don't want it. So hope we can conveniently put the blame upon everybody else. That is what Arjuna is asking. We have to ask, what is it? This is the great robber. And what is the robber? That which covers our knowledge. What does that mean? Ignorance. Ignorance of our true nature. What does it mean? It means covering knowledge of our true nature means making us mistake ourselves as somebody else. This is called adhyasa, superimposition. See, in deep sleep, you have no problem. You don't know who you are. Equally, you don't know who you are not. But waking and dream state, we have this big problem. We don't know who we are, but we think we know who we are. This is called wrong knowledge. This is called adhyasa. This is called superimposition. That is what Arjuna's beautiful question is. Man is forced, as it were. There is no living man who has not in himself a sufficiently clear conception of the good and the meritorious. Everyone understands intellectually what is right and what is wrong. But it is only when it comes to action that invariably either forgets or gets tempted to do the wrong. And the tragedy is, many times we know that we should not do, and we do it. In my past talks, I have given several examples. I am giving some examples. A drunkard, he knows he should not drink. The whole family is getting ruined. A drug addict knows there seems to be some great power which is coming from within ourselves and putting a stop to what we really like to do. Before I proceed further, I would like to point out two factors. First of all, the foe, the enemy, is within ourselves. It is not outside. Secondly, the foe becomes either strong or weak only when we have cultivated it for a long, long time through many, many lives. And therefore, we have to face this foe and what we call resume our journey from the wrong places we have reached, again come to the right path. The Lord is also telling here, we have to understand that there are very few people who do not understand what is right and what is wrong. Even Duryodhana was asked, when he was lying with his thighs broken in the Kurukshetra battlefield, someone went and asked, "Oh prince, you are very intelligent. You seem to know this outcome. Even before the war started, why did you not really put a stop to it? After all, if you had given a little bit, Pandavas would have been happier and you would have been enjoying your vast kingdom." He seems to have replied that, "Janami dharmam nachame pravruti." I know what is right, but I have absolutely no inclination to do it. "Janamya dharmam nachame nivruti." I know what is adharma, what is wrong, but I have absolutely no power to put a stop to it. Another point we need to know in this respect. Was it the Lord who created this situation for the good of the spiritual aspirant, or really there are evil forces in this world who are out to kill us? If you don't accept the law of karma, there are evil forces outside which are trying to overwhelm us. But if we accept the law of karma, we cannot get what we don't deserve, either happiness or unhappiness. Therefore, the whole onus, responsibility, falls squarely upon us. More or less everybody knows. But when they also know that they have to follow this particular, what is called righteous path, something seems to come and put a foot, a break. That was the question that he was asking. This paradoxical confusion between one's ideology and one's own actions becomes quite a big problem to all those who try to introspect and review themselves. The divine in us, with its nobler aspirations, wants to fulfill itself with its higher impulses and subtler achievements. But the animal instinct within us tempts us. Animal instinct means tamas and rajas. Here, one important point we have to understand is, all of us, knowingly or unknowingly, are trying to manifest our divinity only. All our actions have only one goal. What is it? I want to be happy. First, I want to be eternally happy. So even a murderer thinks, I am on the way to eternal happiness by getting rid of this person. The important point is that we may not know that our actions, some of our actions, unintelligent actions, will postpone the progress. And some of the actions hasten our progress. But knowingly or unknowingly, everybody is moving only towards God. This is called spiritual evolution. What was the question of Arjuna? What is that obstruction? Even in spite of knowing this is the right way, doesn't allow many of us to move in that proper direction. The Lord is answering the most wonderful way. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. The Blessed Lord said, "Kama yesha krodha yesha rajoguna samudbhavaha mahashano mahapapma vidhyenam iha vairinam." Listen, I shall tell you who that enemy is, of whom you ask, who is the source of all evil. Further, the Blessed Lord is telling something very important. It is lust, its anger, born of rajoguna, insatiable and prompting man to great sin. Know this to be the enemy in man's spiritual life. These are wonderful points we shall discuss in our next class. But what I want to draw your attention in this particular class is, whether it is kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsarya, 6 enemies, internal enemies, these are called arishadvarga. They are not outside, they are inside. And all of them, they are not 6, they are 1. It changes its form, like Mahishasura. Kama becomes krodha, lust becomes frustrated, lust becomes anger, frustrated anger becomes greediness, then delusion, then egotism, pride, and jealousy. One or the other, if we think we have somehow subdued one, the other pops up and says, I am here. Without the tragedy is without our being aware of it. Our Holy Mother gives the example. The greatest obstruction to spiritual progress for a sadhu is to think I am a sadhu. He is very proud, I am a sannyasi, not like this rabble householders. He is very proud. And how much time does it take for Mahamaya to bring such a man down? A person is a great monk because of mother's will. Person is a householder again because of mother's will only. And we forget, every sadhu has not fallen from the sky. He had gone through all these 3 rings for a long time, and only after that he has become wiser, and then he has taken this life to get a temporary relief. All the sadhus had their past life. This verse also is bringing us a most important point, which we had elaborately discussed in the second chapter, I think 62 and 63 verses, how a man courts ruin. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangasteshu upajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodho vijayate krodhat bhavati sammohaha sammohat smriti vibhramaha smritir bhramshat buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyate. This beautiful idea, though we discussed it, it is worth repeating it, which we will discuss in our next class. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanura Mardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadguru.